have Allison L. Ayati. She's an assistant research scientist at the Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health at the University of California, San Francisco. Her research interests include determinants of maternal mortality and morbidities, access to obstetric care, and the structural, social, and interpersonal factors that configure maternal health disparities. She completed her Doctor of Science degree in Social Epidemiology at Harvard University, Master of Public Health in International Health at Tulane University, and a BA in Anthropology at Colby College. Dr. El-Ayati's current projects include research to improve outcomes for women with obstetric hemorrhage globally and evaluating family and community reintegration after obstetric fistula surgery in Uganda.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for sticking around for these late presentations. So I'm going to be presenting on vital sign prediction of adverse maternal outcomes with a particular focus on the role of shock index. I'd like to recognize my colleagues both at UCSF and King's College London. This was a collaborative analysis between the two institutions while the data did belong to UCSF. And I want to report no conflicts of interest. So we got a little bit of a background about obstetric hemorrhage in our last discussion from Janelle, but I'd like to just share that obstetric hemorrhage is the leading cause of maternal mortality and morbidity globally. It's responsible for 27% of maternal deaths, and it occurs in about 6% of deliveries. Most hemorrhage can't be predicted, so we're really dependent upon prompt identification and treatment to reduce morbidity and mortality. Most of these deaths, as Janelle has indicated, are due to delays in diagnosis and management. So identification, diagnosis, is really dependent upon visual estimation of blood loss in most cases. We found that in validating different measurement methods for blood loss, visual estimation always results in underestimation. And so broad monitoring of vital signs is necessary for identifying risk of hypovolemic shock. So a further challenge of identifying women entering into shock is the fact that the physiologic compensatory mechanisms of pregnancy prevent women from exhibiting signs or symptoms of hypovolemia until they're actually at about 1,200 milliliters of blood loss, which masks their compromised state. So this is among healthy women, and when women have baseline comorbidities, then they're more likely to enter into shock at much lower levels of blood loss as well. So that baseline health is an important determinant of what their tolerance actually will be to blood loss. So shock index is a really interesting clinical parameter that's come out in the trauma literature as a more accurate predictor of hypovolemia. Shock index is calculated by the ratio of pulse to blood pressure. It's very easily calculated by an electronic blood pressure device. So studies in trauma have found a direct relationship between blood loss and, or shock index and blood loss in gastrointestinal bleeding, open wounds, blunt trauma, even in evaluation among healthy blood donors. And we found that there's an inverse relationship between shock index and left ventricular function variables. Among trauma populations, where literature has reported that it's a good predictor of mortality, and it's been significantly better a predictor than either systolic blood pressure or pulse alone. So we want to ask, what about in obstetrics? And due to the huge cardiovascular differences for women during pregnancy, we can't take the data from non-obstetric populations. So there has been some evaluation of shock index in obstetric populations. We found that, or previous researchers have found that it's a better predictor of ruptured ectopic pregnancy than other clinical signs alone. There's been some concern that the first trimester response may be slightly different. And one study showed that a direct relationship between shock index and the need for transfusion for postpartum hemorrhage. But largely, further evaluation of shock index is necessary to understand its utility as an early indicator of compromise. So we conducted a study, and our aims were to compare the predictive ability of shock index to conventional vital signs among women in hypovolemic shock, secondary to obstetric hemorrhage, and this is in low-resource settings. We wanted to determine two optimal thresholds corresponding to increase of adverse maternal outcome, triggering either immediate referral or intensive treatment. So we wanted a lower threshold that really would indicate abnormal shock index. And that could be used depending upon the setting where the woman was being identified for referral or for intensive monitoring. So referral at a lower level and intensive monitoring at a referral hospital level. We also wanted to look at what would be a higher threshold that would indicate imminent need for intensive resuscitation efforts. So our third study aim, which is still to be conducted in the future, is actually putting this into work in the field and evaluating, is using these shock index thresholds actually giving us improved detection of hemorrhage and enabling us to implement treatment earlier. So I used the data, we conducted a secondary analysis of the data from the non-pneumatic anti-shock garment trials. I used the control participants who did not receive the NASG. So the trials took place in Egypt, Nigeria, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. As Janelle mentioned, we had three studies that were quasi-experimental. These studies took place at the referral hospital level, and we had one cluster randomized trial that took place at the clinic level. There were similar but slightly different eligibility criteria across studies. In Egypt and Nigeria at the referral hospital level, women entered the study with estimated blood loss of 750 milliliters or more of blood loss and systolic blood pressure of less than 100 millimeters mercury or pulse of greater than 100. And then in Zambia and Zimbabwe, they needed to have two of three eligibility criteria where blood loss threshold was indicated at 500 milliliters or higher, pulse at 100 or higher, and systolic blood pressure at 100 or lower. So these were all low-resource contexts, even though they were tertiary care facilities. The facilities were under-resourced, and they were characterized in delays in receipt of care. We had IRB approval by UCSF and by all of our local IRBs. Informed consent was provided by women. We did receive a waiver of consent or proxy from relatives where women entered the study and were unconscious or confused. They met the eligibility criteria. Well, so a waiver of consent was provided if they were in those conditions. So if there was no relative available to provide consent for them, then the garment was applied for women in the intervention arm, and these are all women that were not in the intervention arm. Right. Right. Well, it was conducted in different locations, except for the quasi-experimental studies, where it was a temporal difference. Great, so across all of the studies, we collected data on vital signs, level of consciousness, estimated blood loss at enrollment. And during the study, we have data at 15-minute intervals on urine output, blood loss, IV fluid, and blood product receipt, as well as uterotonic medication administered. Women were discharged from the studies when their hemorrhage etiology was treated, and their vital signs were stable, so their systolic had gone above 100 millimeters mercury and pulse had gone below 100 beats per minute for at least 2 hours, and blood loss had decreased to 25 to 50 milliliters per hour or completely stopped. So for this analysis, we selected the vital sign measurement interval with the highest shock index during the first hour after study entry, and the predictors that we evaluated included pulse, systolic blood pressure, mean arterial pressure, which is a measure of organ perfusion, shock index, and pulse pressure. So the blood pressure values were captured by either an automated blood pressure device or using a mercury sphygmomanometer. We looked at five different outcomes, and these were different obstetric hemorrhage-related organ system dysfunction-based criteria and management-based criteria. We had death. We had extreme adverse outcome, which included death or severe maternal morbidity that lasted for 24 hours or more. And we combined that with intensive care unit admission. We had differences in the availability of intensive care units across our facilities. And we then finally used the blood transfusion. We used two different blood transfusion outcomes. So we looked at blood transfusion of 2 or more units and blood transfusion of 4 or more units. So our overall analytic sample was 958 women. We had to exclude some women because of loss to follow-up and those women who had no vital sign data recorded. We conducted a receiver operating curve analysis. We did non-parametric area under the curve estimation and calculated 95% confidence intervals for each predictor with each outcome. We also tested for a quality of the AUCs across predictors for each outcome, and we used pairwise comparison. And we adjusted for this using the Bonferroni for multiple comparisons. We estimated sensitivities, specificities, positive predictive value, negative predictive value for the different thresholds that we looked at. And our goals were with the different thresholds were for the lower threshold, we wanted to maintain high sensitivity with clinically practical specificity. And for the upper thresholds, we wanted to maximize positive predictive value without compromising negative predictive value. I did want to mention that this was a naive analysis. We did not include any adjustment for genetic variables, which is actually a next step in our analysis. So this is the overall participant characteristics of the sample. The mean age was 28.3, median parity was 2. Almost 60% of women entered the study with normal consciousness, but 42% of them had altered consciousness. So this would either be confused, anxious, or unconscious. And the median estimated blood loss at study entry was 1,000. And MAP less than 60, which is the threshold at which we consider inadequate blood perfusion of the vital organs, was 24% of the sample. So those women were really in severe shock. This is the distribution of our participants across hemorrhage diagnoses. As you can see, we have a broad inclusion of antepartum and postpartum etiologies, although the largest proportion or the largest hemorrhage etiology was uterine atony, which is not surprising. And then this slide presents the median and interquartile range for our predictor variables. So you can see that SI was 1.3 and ranged from 1.1 to 1.5. Our median pulse was 117, systolic was 90, mean arterial pressure was 68.7, and pulse pressure, which is systolic pressure minus diastolic pressure, was 34. So this slide presents the area under the curve and the 95% confidence interval for each predictor by each outcome. So we chose to move forward with evaluating the thresholds of shock index because while it was not consistently statistically significantly different than all of the other predictors across the outcomes, it remained in the top two highest areas under the curve for each of the outcomes, and it had a differing pattern in terms of being significantly improved across the different outcomes. So our first step was to look at a lower threshold to indicate abnormal shock index, and we reviewed several different lower thresholds that were based on the literature. I'm just presenting the data here for a threshold of 0.9, and when we compared to lower thresholds that we looked at, we found that 0.9 had slightly lower sensitivities but slightly higher specificities compared to those lower values, and that it performed better than or similarly to in prediction for all of the outcomes. So all of the women in our study had hypovolemic shock, so the high rate of positive test results is not unexpected, and it's clinically acceptable. So we moved forward with recommending 0.9 as indicating abnormal SI and need for referral to tertiary care facility or for intensive monitoring within a tertiary care facility already. We then looked at the centile values at the 60%, 80%, 95%, 98%, and 99% specificity. So using common values across these, we selected the thresholds of 1.4 and 1.7 for further analysis. I'm only presenting the sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, and negative predictive value for the threshold of 1.4. When we compared 1.4 to 1.7, we found that while specificity was maximized at 1.7, sensitivities were much lower, and higher negative predictive values were achieved at 1.4 compared to 1.7. So we chose 1.4 as the higher of the two thresholds, indicating the need for intensive treatment. So overall, our results indicated that SI was consistently a strong predictor of all adverse outcomes, and as I mentioned before, it was in differing relationships across the different outcomes, but there was no other indicator that was as consistently highly predictive across all of the outcomes that we looked at as shock index. So our lower threshold of 0.9 had high sensitivity and clinically practical specificity. Our upper threshold of 1.4 identified women at highest risk of adverse outcome and maximized sensitivity and negative predictive value. And we had conducted some previous analyses and have with a group in another group where they're looking at high resource locations, and they had identified a threshold of 1.7, but our data was slightly different. We also felt the need to prioritize a slightly lower value due to the fact that we're in our locations, women were experiencing more delays in care, so we didn't think that that was ethically acceptable. I wanted to present the strengths and limitations of this analysis. This is really a preliminary evaluation, and there's very few work that's happening around shock index in obstetric populations based in low-resource context, and we've benefited from a fairly large sample of women with a variety of obstetric hemorrhage etiologies, which supports generalizability across different etiologies, both antepartum and postpartum. And we also had a very robust outcome of mortality. Some of the limitations include the limits to generalizability are really based on areas with similar clinical and population characteristics. We also had a lower prevalence of our most robust outcome. So we had a 4% death rate and a 7% extreme adverse outcome rate. That's not ideal for predictive studies. And our higher prevalence outcomes, which were receipt of blood transfusion, were more susceptible to supply issues. So, for example, and also so blood transfusion ICU. So blood availability, the presence of ICU, the financial ability of patients, and human resource constraints are all affecting what's happening in these clinical settings. Finally, I mentioned previously the fact that this is a naive analysis, and a more thorough analysis should include an evaluation of the role of treatment and treatment timing and amount in the trajectory between shock index at study entry or baseline and what a woman's outcome is going to be. So further research needs from this preliminary analysis are the inclusion of the timing and impact of therapies on SI, the relationship between SI and resuscitation. And as I mentioned, we're moving forward with a prospective study to evaluate how does this work in practice. And ideally, this will occur at multiple clinical levels using different types of care providers, including lower levels of healthcare systems, so that we would really love for this to be used to improve referral practices. And so it needs to be something that can be effectively implemented at the primary healthcare or community healthcare worker level. Thank you so much for your attention. Please feel free to follow up with any questions. Thank you.